Blog Talk Radio.
Coming up next, writer-director Frances Abbey, producer Paul Busetti, and actor Demetrius Parker tell us about their new film, Boxing Day. It's coming up next on Movie Geeks United.
I've had the privilege of working with all three of the gentlemen that we are going to be interviewing tonight. And if you've ever worked on a film shoot before, it is the ultimate in a bonding experience and probably the most fun I've had the last couple of years. So please, tonight, we have some of the show's oldest and dearest friends and our longest supporters, Frances Abbey and Paul Busetti. We also welcome a newcomer, Demetrius Parker. It is a great pleasure to welcome them back to our show to tell us about their newest project, Boxing Day, which will have its premiere on August 7th at the AFI Silver in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Okay,
could you please give each of these gentlemen a very warm and hearty Movie Geeks United welcome?
I got them on the line here. I'm bringing them up one by one. And there's an extra line here, too.
Okay, well, I'd like to start by, I know, Paul, that you have been on the show before, and you've told us a little bit about your background, as has Frances, but since Demetrius is new to the show, I was wondering if you could tell us what got you involved in film and acting and music, since you're also a talented musician as well.
Sexuality.
Oh, Frances, is this you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay,
man. And then Paul, you disappeared for some reason. Paul, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay. You got all three of them now, Jerry.
Okay, Demetrius. Okay, Demetrius. Let's start over now since we have all three of them on the line. I want to ask each of you, just get a little background information on each of you, what got you into film, into the arts. And I wanted to start with Demetrius since he has not been on the show before. And I wanted to, what got you involved in acting and music? Demetrius, are you there?
I've got him right here. Well, this is going like gangbusters, guys.
Oh, I know. Oh. All right.
This is live radio. This is live radio.
Anything can happen, folks. Okay.
Paul, you want to pretend like you're Demetrius and answer that question?
Paul, why don't you go ahead and go for it? What was it that got you involved in filmmaking?
Oh, Demetrius? Yeah, I'll tell you all about Demetrius. I've known Demetrius for about 11 years. We met each other. He was hopping boxcars on a train to get out to the Midwest, try and make his big break as a juggler, and that didn't pan out too well. I don't know anything about it. I think he spent some time in the Army. I don't know. I think he's killed people and probably had people killed.
Okay, all right.
He took Fredo.
All right, private joker.
He took Fredo out on a boat and shot him.
Okay.
He had Al Neary do it. I don't know.
Okay,
but,
There is one true thing to that Demetrius is a Desert Storm vet, which if you watch the movie, you won't believe that he's as old as he is. I'm not going to say how old he is, but
I guess you can't really say that.
Yeah, right. But the Desert Storm, will give you a point of reference, so you can do the math on your own.
Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
All right. That's good to know for just future reference and future films.
The juggling is true too.
Okay.
All right.
True. All right, Paul. You basically did the Quentin Tarantino film school.
Thing. Absolutely, yeah.
And what was it though? What set you up film? Why?
Well, I mean, I have to thank all the belligerent customers at the store for really tipping the scales. I mean, I always wanted to be around film and all that. And then you spend a few years. Listening to people gripe and complain about what they don't like in the movies they'd like to get. you know, done, and you're griping with them, and then one day you just have to kind of, you know, put your money where your mouth is a little bit.
Pick up the camera yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was working on scripts and everything, and just, you know, you kind of work on a script and then shuffle it away, half finish it, shuffle it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you start seeing movies that are being made, you know, cheaper and cheaper, and cameras get cheaper and cheaper.
Right.
And the crews get smaller, and you think, well, I know a few people who are like-minded, I could do this too.
I want to get to that later, because you're like sort of the original rebel without a crew. I don't think I've ever met anyone in my life who can do more with less. You're pretty incredible that way.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very, I've just never seen anything like it. Now, Francis, I know all the answers to the questions I'm going to ask you, but for our listening audience, what was it that said you film?
Well, I think, like, you know, for me it was kind of a realization, because I've always been, a terrible daydreamer. But I didn't grow up in a household that was, like, an avid movie-watching family. We didn't have, like, a video camera or anything like that. So it wasn't
It's not
until
a pro
I was...
thing. It's not good. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't raise your kids like that. It did me in.
But when I got to, senior in high school and going into college, I finally figured that was when, like, Pulp Fiction came out and Desperado, which introduced me to El Mariachi, and then I figured out what it was a writer-director did.
Right.
And then I said, you know, that's what I want to do. That's what I think I've wanted to do the whole time. I just wasn't aware of it. So that's kind of where I came to that realization.
Okay, yeah, and you was actually, you wanted to be an architect at first, right? You was,
right, that's right, yeah. And I don't know how fervently I ever wanted to be an architect, but I said that it caused me a nervous breakdown in high school. I was in an architectural drafting class, and I realized that I was terrible at it. So I was looking for a new calling. And that's when it was the beginning of that realization, because over that summer I saw a couple of movies and I found out about Robert Rodriguez doing a movie on his own and everything like that. And then from my freshman year of college, I read Rebel Without a Crew,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of sealed the deal. So.
Well, that book seems to have inspired a lot of people, and it's a great book.
Yeah, it's one of the few books I've actually read from cover to cover.
You're not, you don't sell yourself short. You sell yourself short like that. Look, you could be worse. You could be staring at a captioning screen all day. Okay, so don't sell yourself short, all right? Okay, I really want to now get into Boxing Day.
Oh, can I just butt in real quick before we get into Boxing Day? I just want to, something that Francis said really just reminded me. I have to thank.
You guys get me now?
Oh, well,
Demetrius is here.
We got Demetrius. Demetrius, I was giving, first of all, welcome to the show, Demetrius.
Hey,
it's a pleasure
you,
to have you on, really. Your performance in the movie is incredible, and it is great to have you here. But I want to know what inspired you to go into film, to in acting and also music?
I guess that my dad said I started dancing first. Actually, I used to be a dancer, not a stripper. Shut
okay,
up, Paul.
I figured that.
shut up, Paul. I was dancing first, and then I started modeling when I was 16. And then from modeling, actually, I guess I started getting some recognition, and then a couple people asked me to be in a couple movies. And actually, while I was in the military, I was actually in Gardens of Stone.
Wow, and, okay.
Yeah, once again, I guess now I'm showing my age. But anyway.
That's all right. It's, you know, I've worked with you, and I've worked with you, and I can attest to the fact that you don't look older than 22, okay? So that's all.
So you've had experience working with Coppola? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
Wow.
Hell, I didn't know that.
You got to tell me about that, man.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
that's not in the press release that you guys gave us.
No, it's not. I was like an extra. They used the old guard. They actually used the old guard. Some of the soldiers for extras because, I mean, they were making a movie about the old guard.
Sure.
And I had been one to be a part of the old guard since I was in high school. So I was actually home on leave, and my buddy who was up there was like, they're filming a movie. He knew I was in the whole entertainment business, so they let me borrow one of their uniforms. I'm not going to say who name it is because then they'll get in trouble. But anyway, then we bought the uniforms. I got a chance to be an extra in that movie. And, of course, then I was like, wow, I really love this. And it kind of went from there. So once I got out of the military, I started trying to do it, you know, full time or, you know, semi-professional, I should say.
Okay. All right. Now, Paul, you had something to say before.
Oh, yeah, just real quickly, just saying Francis said about I just wanted to, give credit to my folks were, they always would bring home Hitchcock movies and Michael Curtiz movies and John Huston movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, I would not hate it when I was a kid, but, I wanted to watch, The Goonies and The Princess Bride. I wanted to watch movies that, my friends were all watching. And, I really thank them for that, because I got to watch those from, a really young age and,
right.
Get real love for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I want. So that, it went back, that far, It's nice to go back and rediscover those movies years later then, too.
Right. Okay. Well, Francis, how did Boxing Day come about? What was the genesis for this idea?
Well, as you guys, I should say this. It's been like about almost a year exactly since I called you guys from a payphone in Canada to plug my reading in New York of Pennsylvania.
That's right.
And basically since graduating from grad school in Savannah, I've been trying to get a feature made. And Pennsylvania was the first attempt. And then I wrote subsequently two other feature-length scripts and tried to get those made, but it was just too difficult to get any kind of money to do it. And so I said, let me make something as cheaply as possible. And this was around Christmas time. And I think, Christmas is a great time. There's so many great Christmas movies.
Right.
And if it is Christmas, you've automatically decorated the set. It's like you don't even have to worry about it because everybody's got Christmas decorations. You don't have to buy anything. You just throw up the Christmas tree and put some lights up and stuff like that, and then you've got Christmas. And and then I started thinking of actors that I knew and I liked working with and who I thought were talented. And, of course, Demetrius was one of the first people I thought of. I had actually written a part for him in a previous script, which was a smaller role, but I've always had him in mind as actors I like working with. And then Bridget Devlin Burke, who's I met acting. I actually met both Demetrius and Paul by acting. And when I was acting with another one of Paul's productions, How Did You Lose Your Soul, Sweetheart, which we talked about on here. I met Bridget.
Right.
So I had those two actors in mind. And then I had just met Jenna St. John, who had acted in Cannibal Cheerleader Camp with Paul. And with those three people, I kind of started thinking, what could I do with this? And I started coming up with the idea of, Bridget and Demetrius being a couple and then coming home for Christmas and then the whole issue of them being an interracial couple. And then it wasn't until after that I realized that it was Guess Who's Coming to Dinner again.
But, right. Uh-huh.
But I said, but clearly through a different lens because I think, that movie's 4 years old now. And so I said, this is kind of where we're at now, where it's like intellectually we accept the interracial relationship, but it's almost like a tragedy befalling your family where you think, you never think it's going to happen to you. So on the surface, you're like, oh, yeah, of course, black and white people should marry. But then when it actually happens, you panic, and you don't know how to handle it. So so that was the basis for it. And then I just started writing parts for people that I knew, with the exception of there's six main roles in the film, and with the exception of one of them, I wrote each for an actor that I knew. And
so you had everyone in mind pretty much when you were writing this.
Yeah,
you knew
I did,
exactly.
Yeah.
So did that make the rehearsals go? Rehearsals I guess went a lot quicker.
Well, we didn't actually have an opportunity. Yeah, we had a general read through. Yeah, what rehearsal? Yeah. In fact, well, truthfully, the I originally envisioned the film. I wanted to do it like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I wanted to write up an elaborate synopsis for each scene, and then just let the actors go.
Right.
But my synopsis was so detailed that I said I should just write a script because it's going to be easier to just write a script at this point because I'm writing so many things that I want to include. So I ended up doing that. Although the actors didn't, I'm not a dictator about you got to stick to the script and you got to say my words and stuff like that. I let them ad lib, and the unfortunate part, and it was sort of like a double-edged sword. By the end of the shoot, when we were just wrapping up, everybody was really comfortable with each other, and they were ad-libbing more, and it was, and I loved it. I thought it was great. They were bringing a lot to each part, and that helped it so much more.
What did because you met a lot of people from the sitcom that you were on the internet, Buddy Jackson.
Yeah.
What did you pick up from Barry Gribble? Did you pick up a lot about, the shoot and everything? Because what I was amazed about, You guys shot a 90-page script in 2 weekends.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, that, I mean, certainly Barry, working with Barry on Buddy Jackson helped with that, because we would shoot 3 to 4 episodes of Buddy Jackson, which is, you know, 5-minute sitcom in like in 2 days. What I learned from that is, like, staying in one location allows you to do that, because as long as you, when you take out travel time and all this, like, management of different sites and stuff like that, you can really, really move. So that was kind of the thing. It was sort of like a play almost, like a one-act play. Well, yeah, one-act play in, like, one location. And so certainly it came from that. It also came from these marathon film festivals, like the 48-hour film project and
right.
the National Film Challenge that I've worked on. And a number of the crew have also worked on those. So they, you know, they've been in that kind of, you know, you basically shoot until you drop kind of mentality. So.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, it was amazing the speed by which you guys would go through a day and the amount of pages you got done.
We were basically, I mean, like, it was a total of, let's see, we did Friday through Sunday 2 weekends in a row, and, like, Friday evening. So, like, 2.5 days basically there. And then we had 2 days out on location. Before I had even written the script, I took Demetrius and Bridget out to the National Christmas Tree while it was up to shoot that, so that we could have that and sell the idea that it was Christmas by having the National Tree out in front of the White House.
No, that was very smart. I remember you doing that. Now, I just have to ask, just with the events of this week and the news and just the year, were you aware at the time that you were writing this that this movie would be so timely? I mean, this is as timely as they come. And another question, I just thought of this earlier. Were you aware that of the rumor they remade gets
Oh, did we lose Jerry?
Uh-oh.
hang on.
I think we did, yeah.
Did we lose Jerry?
I think his line got disconnected.
Okay, well, I'll...
Was he overwhelmed? He was overwhelmed.
I think his question... Jerry, if you can call back in, I think your line for some reason got cut off. Were you aware of Guess Who, the recent remake of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? I think that's what
I was after the fact, but it starred Ashton Kutcher, so I figured I could remake it, and anything we did would be better than a film starring Ashton Kutcher. And if Ashton Kutcher wants a piece of me for that comment, he knows where to find me. So
he's going
to
punk you so badly.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm
going to
punk really, really badly.
He's
going to
show up.
Yeah.
It's going to be bloody. It's going to be bloody.
But Demi's going to have me killed. She's going to send somebody after me. But the thing, I'll say this to everybody who's listening right now. Barack Obama has a prominent role in our film.
Prominent.
I'm not going to tell you more than that. But yes, and it didn't really. I mean, because of that, I kind of worked it into the film. But I didn't really, you know, it was just something that kind of came to me, and then it was like after the fact that I said, oh look, you know, it's really timely, and there's all this other stuff going on. And then I didn't know that Guess Who had come out, but it's, you know, they kind of reversed it, and I hadn't seen. I didn't want to see it at that point because I didn't want to start stealing anything from the film. Consciously or unconsciously.
Right.
So, I just
back. I don't know what happened.
I think Jerry's back on the line. There he is.
Yeah.
I just unmuted him. There you go, buddy.
What happened? What? Did I get cut off?
The switchboard cut you off for some reason, but you're back.
Okay. All right. I missed. So I think you at least heard of the remake, though.
We just saw the Kennedy assassination, and we're waiting for you to get back.
Oh, okay. Kennedy assassination. God, I miss out on everything. I mean, I'm cut off. I mean, if tonight's like technical difficulty, the epitome of it.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, Paul, what attracted you to the project? What attracted you to Boxing Day?
Oh, I didn't know I had a choice.
Oh, you didn't know you had a choice. They put a gun to your head?
No, no. Anything. I mean, Francis knows that. I mean, Francis is. I've never heard Francis say no to me about anything, and I would never say no to Francis about anything he was going to do. And, you know, Francis has been sending me his scripts, you know, Pencil Tucky and Schoolgirl and Designated Driver, you know, for a while now. And, you know, to get to read something that he wrote and then actually get him, you know, to help him do it, how could I turn that down, you know?
No,
I mean,
of course,
it was too good. It was too good to be true. I mean, his stuff is, you know, you sit at the computer. I mean, it's very often, I mean, reading scripts is kind of it kind of goes with the territory. You know, people want to send you scripts and read them and tell them what you think and all that, and you send them to other people, and it's usually pretty dreadful to read other people's scripts. You know, it's just you sit
yes,
there and read for 2 or 3 hours, and it's, you know, it's hard to get inside their head in terms of what they were thinking visually and all that. But with this, because it was so dialogue-driven, you could sit there, and because I knew the people who were going to be in it, I could kind of hear the voices of all the dialogue in my head while I was reading it and just laugh out loud. And when you're sitting at a computer at 2 in the morning laughing out loud at someone's writing, you know it's going to be good when it gets shot.
Right. No, that's good to know, and that leads me to another question I want to ask later on. But first, let's go ahead. This is going to be at the AFI Silver Theater August 7th. Can you let our listeners know where they can purchase tickets?
Yes, our website, www.boxingdaymovie.com. And then you can get to our site, find out more about the film there, see the trailer. So August 7th, 9 p.m., it's in Silver Spring, Maryland. Just a 4-hour drive from New York if you're there. But
yeah, I'll be there. I'll
gonna be big.
I'll be there. I'm going to leave tomorrow. I'll get there in time.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
No problem.
No. But this is pretty important because this is something that you have touched on, Paul, recently in a blog that you posted on MySpace.
Yeah,
and also on Francis's Potomac film blog.
Yeah.
We all talked about this, but I want to get from each of you. Does this area have a viable film scene?
Are you asking me first?
I'm asking. I'll start with you. I want Francis's input, and I want Dimitri's input.
No. My quick answer is no. We don't have a film scene. There's movies being made everywhere. There's definitely movies being made in Northern Virginia and D.C., but it's not a scene. I don't think of it as a very collective scene of filmmakers. There's no movement, really. There's no kind of through line connecting all of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really. And I'm in New York, and I don't think, if you ask me if there's a film scene in New York, I wouldn't say there's a film scene in New York. There's productions everywhere, but there's not a scene. I think there's probably a scene in Austin right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's different scenes that pop up where it's, you know, a group of filmmakers, and they're all kind of making the same type of movie, they're working together, they're kind of collaborative, but in Northern Virginia, I really don't think there is, and I don't mean to sound pessimistic, I'm not saying there can't be, I touched on my blog just the fact that I think people are making a lot of excuses about, about it, about the fact, and they think they should be, they should get credit just for making a movie. Like, to make a movie in Virginia is already a big enough deal, which it isn't. You know,
right.
It's probably easier to make a movie in Virginia than it is in New York because you don't have to deal with permits and unions and things. It's just not a cottage industry
right.
in Northern Virginia. So you can kind of get away with a little bit more. I mean, there's probably less talent, but the talent that there is just as strong.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
something
we
touched on with Lonnie Martin last summer with Women's Studies. He said, if you have a script that's not an industrial video or documentary, but you have an actual narrative, people get very excited.
Very excited, yeah.
I mean, they want to work on something that's very creative, something that's not, you know, a government training video or something. They get very excited. So I think what you guys offer with 10 Sundays is you have a lot of creative energy brewing daily.
Yeah.
And I don't see why it can't be like the Discord Records of film.
Yeah, I mean, we pride ourselves as if you look at most production companies, most small production companies, which we are, in that area, the majority of them, other than, you know, making films and music videos and stuff like that, they'll also, they have their equipment, and they'll rent out to people, and they'll shoot your wedding, and they just, it's kind of a smorgasbord of videography and technical, you know, and we don't do that. It's
right.
purely to make films, and I think, you know, the reason some don't get taken as seriously as they are is because, you know, on their websites, it's all, we can, you know, shoot your kid's birthday party. And, you know, that's fine if you need to do that, you know, to make some scratch and pay your rent. I mean, obviously, I'm not gonna talk down about people who do that. That's fine.
Right.
But to have a production company and say, we're a film production company, we want to be taken seriously, you have to make films. There's only one thing you have to do to have a production company is just make films. That's all you have to do. You just have to make films, you know, honestly and as well as you can. And you can't bitch about, oh, well, if I was in L.A., it would be easier. If I was in New York, it would be easier. If I had this, it would be easier. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, it's been proven wrong that, you know,
it's
with
not
talent,
easier. Everyone's out in those areas.
Exactly.
It's
you know,
small piece of the pie.
Exactly. And you know, you can be a very big fish in a little pond in that area. You really can. You can be in the Northern Virginia area, D.C. area, and be a much bigger fish and get a lot more recognition because there is less competition. I mean, there just are less films being made. There are plenty of good films being made. I just don't think there's a scene, really. I don't really think there is. And I mean, I come back between, you know, I lived in there for, you know, 24 years, and now I spend, you know, half my time coming down there and the other half here in New York, and I don't see anything really, like, groundbreaking there where I really feel like there's a movement. And the other thing I touched on the blog is I don't feel like movies being made in Virginia have anything to do with Virginia. I mean, there's just to give a tiny little shout out. Some buddies of mine, Richard Klein and John Bradley, who made Where's Waldo 2, and they have the Sean Molloy Productions. Their films completely embrace Virginia and the area and the locales and everything about it. The way people talk, the way people act. They're not trying to hide the fact they're making movies there. You know, you can look at their movies and say they couldn't have made those in New York. They couldn't make them there. And even Boxing Day, the kind of family it is and the setting, that's something very true to, you know, kind of like a Bowie, Maryland, kind of like
a suburban Maryland film. That's about suburban Maryland.
Very
I grew
much
up with
about,
that.
It's very much about a certain place at a certain time. And, of course, you know, this election's coming up, and like Francis said, you know, Obama plays a part in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And because race is on everyone's mind and people are having to deal with it a little bit more than they had to ever, you know, I think it's a very good movie in terms of place and time. I think it's you know, I don't see that a whole lot. A lot of the films I see being made in Virginia could have been made in a different time and a different place. So I don't think there's a definitive scene.
Okay. Well, wow. All right. Francis?
Let's let Demetrius answer that. He's been quiet for some time. So.
Okay, yeah, I was worried about that. all right, Demetrius, please chime in.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a listener, so that's fine. anyway, I guess it depends on what you try to, you know, describe a scene. In a way, I have to agree with Paul. You know, people aren't really making films that say, hey, this is Virginia, or this is Maryland, or this is even D.C. I think a couple different reasons of that is because when you say Virginia, you said it to someone, a lot of people, well, you're like, okay, what is Virginia? I mean, you know, it's kind of like when you're in the military, where you are from means a lot. But, like, I remember in the military, people who were from Virginia and Maryland, they always said they were from D.C. Like, no one ever said, oh, yeah, I'm from Arlington. Like,
that's right.
You would look at them and go, Arlington, Texas. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, so the whole thing is, I unfortunately, the filmmakers, in this area, they have that mentality. And in D.C., sometimes the filmmakers don't really want people to know it's D.C. because they didn't get a license. D.C. charges so much to film in D.C., that's why Hollywood doesn't even film in D.C. I mean, it's why it makes sense in Canada, because D.C. is like, yeah, you can film here. I'm a rob you. You know, I'm gonna take all your money, and I mean, I was born and raised in D.C., and it's sad because I think a lot more movies would be made in D.C. and would probably showcase D.C. more if, you know, they didn't have such high costs to do so. So I think a lot of filmmakers try to hide that so they won't know, yeah, I shot in your city and I didn't get your permit.
Right.
So, you know, you gotta kind of, you know, like I said, it's very guerrilla style, very guerrilla style. I work in a lot of action movies that happen in the city, and, of course, you know, every now and again, you do want people to know it's the city. There's a lot of, I guess, neighborhood-type movies that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
Like, movies that have been made about the streets, they want you to know it's the city.
You're right.
If it's made about the streets, they want you to know it's the city. Look, you know, it's about Southeast. It's about Northeast. It's about the struggle that's happening in the city. But if you're talking about your everyday movie, not so much. I mean, and Boxing Day, like you said, Boxing Day does show you, you know, that Maryland that Maryland mentality where, you know, it's all great. You know, I play golf with the black guy. You know, and, you know, Francis and I had discussion beforehand because I, you know, I date across the board. I'm colorblind when it comes to dating. And we had that discussion before that, you know, I had been in some of those situations when I met the family. And when they thought I was, you know, their daughter's friend, it was great. But when they found out friend meant, you know, boyfriend, it was like, whoa.
And the film does a great job of expressing that. I mean, everyone, all the performances, I mean, I felt really got this across very well.
Thank you.
So,
I
hope I answered your question about scene.
No, you did. No, you did, because it's something that's been on my mind for the last couple of weeks, and let's get Francis's take.
Well, certainly, like I've said that you got New York, which is a big film place, you know, the second biggest outside of Los Angeles, and then below that you've got kind of like from Philly to Richmond is one sort of big market, and then when you go further south, then you got like the Carolinas. So, but like Baltimore is a city. See, it's like D.C. versus Baltimore because they got two distinct identities. And Baltimore, you got like Barry Levinson and John Waters who make Baltimore movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, obviously, they're working on a much bigger level. But John Waters is, you know, he started out as like super, super indie. He's still like indie, but dealing with, you know, a couple million dollars.
Right.
But he is, and he's got no shame about, like, here's Baltimore, and, you know, this is what I love about it. So I think that's great. Yeah, we don't have that here because, you know, I live in the part of Maryland that's right on the border of D.C., and D.C. is so much more of it's a political city, and that's what you know. When you see in the movies, you always see D.C., it's about the politics. You don't ever hear about, like, the people that live, like, the half a million people that live in the district or whatever. But that's kind of a tangent. But as far as the film scene, there's a lot of people that are like operating in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. And, you had said that, yes.
And that's like part of the reason I started this Potomac film blog, because I want people to get on there and like so you know, so to try to build a sense of community amongst the people, especially just in this, you know, this region,
mm-hmm.
like right here immediately, like Northern Virginia and Maryland bordering D.C. and D.C. itself, you know, because with people just kind of going out there doing their own thing. I'll find out, like I'll meet actors and they'll say, oh, I'm auditioning for this thing. It's like, I never even heard about that. It's like, how is all this stuff going on? And I don't even know about it. And you know, that's like, I would like to see more of these filmmakers talking and not just kind of working. You know, you think that like, it's like, oh, we're going to make a movie here. Like Paul said, it's like, we're going to make a movie in Virginia. And that's going to be great because we made a movie in Virginia. But there's a lot of people making movies in Virginia and, and you know, in D.C. and Maryland. So, and it's, you know, there's no, I think once you find out that you're not, and I don't want to say in a bad way, but you're not unique. I mean, there's other people out there. There's a community that you should foster that. And then, you know,
but no one's talking to each other.
So, yeah.
And really quick, I do want to say, like Brian Dragunov is somewhat trying to push that as well.
Right, right.
You
right.
know, with putting together, you know, his list of all the auditions and things
no,
like that.
No, he's great. His stuff on the Women in Film and Video listserv, he's always sending out stuff. He's wonderful. He is trying. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, so it's good that there is somebody like Brian Dragunov out there who's you know, kind of pooling that. He's become kind of the guy now. Everybody's on his mailing list, and a lot of people are on the Women in Film and Video mailing list here in the area to get all kinds of, like, casting calls and information about
productions. He's always been helpful.
Productions. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, I have a couple of questions. Tell me, Paul and Francis, what you think amongst independent filmmakers, because obviously you guys have been at this, you know, you've been at this for years and years and several films under your belt, what the common mistakes are for an independent filmmaker, where you see their downfall a lot of times.
Wow.
Francis, you want to go first, or?
Yeah, okay. I think, you know, trying to run before you can walk and letting your, like, ambition just go crazy, you know, thinking of like, oh, yeah, we're going to make this movie, and it's like a $5 million movie, and you're trying to make it with no money. So that was one of the things about Boxing Day. It's like I took out anything that could possibly cost a whole lot of money and just said it's going to be about actors and acting and the script and everything like that. And you know, we did it for $2,000. So I think that's one of the things, like, because that's what happens with a lot of of kind of like bigger indies, they'll say, oh, well, we ran out of money, and you know, they'll stop. Like I just this week, I'm not going to say the name, but like there was a production that stopped because they had no money.
I will name the name, by the way.
Okay,
Paul,
not bound by the same code of ethics. But
no, not any code of ethics whatsoever. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, they shut down. They found out the director or writer found out that the producers had no money, and that got shut down. So, I mean, money is like the stumbling block. And I heard the tail end of the conversation about Take, and like and I think that that's one. It can be liberating, or it can be you know, your biggest downfall. Like the money. It's like it's how you deal with it. And if you know that, okay, this is all the money we've got, you make your movie to around that amount, and you don't try to overdo it.
Exactly.
Yeah, the like one of the big inspirations for this movie was the mumblecore movement, although I wouldn't consider this a mumblecore movie. It's not, like, I think, like, subject matter-wise, it's not quite the same, and it's more, like, straight-up comedy. But The Puffy Chair by the Duplass brothers was, like, a big one, and, I mean, it's a very simple film. It's like a road movie with, like, four people, and, like, you've got, and then you've got a couple of additional actors in it. And it cost them $15,000, and I think it's a very, very nice film. And,
but you're making a film that is very character driven, dialogue driven.
Yeah, right.
Rehearsal would have to be essential. You have to get it before you shoot it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, we only had one opportunity to sit down really with the actors. But the thing was is that I knew, except for one person, I knew everybody involved.
Yeah.
And so I knew that they were capable actors.
Right.
And that's a big thing. You know, if I had to come in and somebody couldn't act, I'd have been in big trouble. But and that actually, you know what, that I'd say that's maybe a stumbling block too, is like Paul and I talked about this. He's like, casting actors is one thing that you shouldn't screw up, you know? It's like you really don't have an excuse unless you're in a place where there's no good actors. And then
right.
you just have to go somewhere else and make your movie. But, like, don't cast bad actors.
Well, absolutely. It's the audience's way into your film. Demetrius, I'm wondering how for you as an actor you find these experiences working on independent projects. Does it bring upon its own unique challenge to you?
I would say, you know, from an actor standpoint, and I've coached a couple, I guess, directors now and film company owners who I knew back, you know, before they even got their company started. But one of the things I see that it's pretty much being organized. I mean, that's one of the things that I loved about this project. It was organized. Like, you know, we knew when we went in, we knew what we were doing that day. You know, for the most part, you know, we got started on time. I mean, of course, there's always technical difficulties or little small things, but for the most part, I would say, as far as crew was concerned, things were ready when they were supposed to be ready. And we knew that, you know, if an actor had to get out at a certain time because they had another commitment, most of the time that was done. And that is, like, fantastic because that does not happen on most sets. I mean, you go to most of these independent sets and they have no clue. Like, you get there that day and they tell the actors, be here at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then you show up and the crew is showing up at 6 o'clock in the morning too, and you're like, hold up. You're like, why am I here at 6 o'clock in the morning and you're just setting up?
Right.
You know, and it's like, and then they don't get set up until 9, and then your scene is still another 2 hours away. And you're like, do you know what I could have done, like, in all this time? You know, and you're not paying me? And the other thing is, I'll say this, and as many filmmakers that are listening, okay, actors, if we're doing this, if you're not paying us, okay, then that means we're doing this for the copy. We're not doing it for the food, because most of the time you don't give us good food, most of the time. So we're doing it for the copy. So please give the copy, because so many do not.
Right,
so many go.
Like a copy of the film, you know, for that
Yeah, exactly.
Reveal, you know?
That's a really great point, and that's across the board. I talk to so many actors who I'll hear they're in something. I'll be like, how'd it turn out? They'll be like, I don't know. I never got a copy. I don't even know if they finished it. I never got a copy. And that's just like, you know, a terrible sin, I think, to not even get the actors a copy of the film. I mean, if they're working for free, Demetrius is exactly right. They want the film. They want to be able to put it on the reel. They want to, you know, show people. I mean, there's no excuse not to do that.
Right, right. Well, gentlemen, all right, I hate to, because this is awesome so far, but we have run out of time. And I want to thank you all for coming on and telling us about the film and for telling us about your experiences, because they do mean a lot. And it's one of the main reasons that I've stuck with the show this long is for you guys, to get allow you to get your film out there. That's no bullshit. That's really why I do this, because I wanted you guys to come back and talk about your films, because it means the world to me and it means the world to our listeners. But just one more time, you can just give the website where they can get the tickets.
Yes. Okay, one more time, www.boxingdaymovie.com, and also, you know, check us out. We got a fan page on Facebook, and we're on MySpace, so, you know, check those out, too.
And you guys have got to come back after the festival circuit, or during, because you have, you entered the film into Austin, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's just above Austin.
That's wonderful. Good luck.
Thank you.
Guys, it's been really great. I'm really glad that you came on.
Thanks for having you guys.
Thank you.
It's been great.
All right, thanks. Have a good night. Good
luck. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Are you a filmmaker looking for a great score for your next movie? Well, look no further than Michael McCormick, the composer whose works you hear at the opening and the closing of every episode of Movie Geeks United. This is a phenomenal talent, and you can hear more samples of his work at michaelmccormickmusic.com or on his MySpace page, which you can access through the Movie Geeks United Top Friends.